Amen. My name is Lyle, and I'm just so grateful to God that he's in my life. I'm so grateful I don't live in shame anymore. You know, what you said, Brian, really takes off with me. Because for years, I had gotten clean and began to live right. And I had met someone I thought I might want to get married to. But in this city, my name was just horrible. My name was horrible. And I prayed. I said, God, you know, you're going to have to maybe find me another place to move to so that when I do marry, I won't bring shame into my home, bring shame to my wife because of my name. And God laughed. God laughed. God changed my name in the middle of the mess. In the very place I wreaked havoc, God changed my name. And I thank God for that. But that's not where we're going tonight. I see I have a question. Does God see you when you think you're all alone? Does God see you when you think you're all alone? The politically correct answer to that is yes. The true answer to that is yes. But somebody here tonight said yes, so don't believe that. And I've been there. Because if I really thought God saw me when I was by myself, there's no way I would have did some of the things I've done. Even saved. There's no way I would have done some of the things that I've done, even saved, if I just believed in my heart. Sometimes my prayer is, God, help me in my unbelief. You hear me say that sometimes. Because if I really believed, I was one of those people who couldn't stand to be under no one's authority. I hated prison, hated jail, hated house arrest, hated halfway houses, hated all those things because I didn't want nobody telling me what to do. I couldn't stand it. And it was in my nature, in that sick mind of mine, to always try to find the way out. Because my problems were always your fault. I wouldn't be going through this if my case manager wasn't such an idiot. I wouldn't have these problems if the judge just didn't like me. I wouldn't be going through this if the people at work, you know, well, I had some sympathy or had some empathy. It was always somebody's fault, which made it easy for me to have a need to fight. I was one of those people who had a need to want to fight. And when I say fight, I don't always mean physically fight. I wanted to fight the system. I had to have a need to fight the system. So what I had to do was blame the system. If I blame you, now whatever I do to you, because I have created you as an enemy. And when you become an enemy of mine, in my mind, from the streets and the way I was raised, when you become an enemy of mine, all is fair game. So I had to create that stupidness. And when nobody's looking, see, I could clean up well. Been to college. I can speak articulate when I need to. I can use big words, you know, the rapacity. I can go to different things and say things that you probably wouldn't. See, but one thing I've learned, I say this before I go on. One thing I learned about college. College only teaches you a couple things. It teaches you how to go get answers. It teaches you how to go get the answers. And then it gives you words that mean the same thing that you always used. When you were a child, you said riddle. But when you became older, you said enigma. And when you go to college, they call it a conundrum. All the same word, but you learn to use these words. That's what college does for you. It's this conundrum, enigma, riddle, same word. But you learn to use these big words. But anyway, I've learned to get it right. I can go in front of the case manager, have on my best shirt, and say what I need to say, even had to walk down, you know, and they I thought they believed me. You know what I mean? But my mind was far from what I was saying. My actions when nobody was looking was far from what I was saying. You know, because I was one of those guys on house arrest who stayed on the phone with one of them girls, talking about things I really had no business talking about, trying to get together and figure out how we're going to do this that nobody can catch us. Figuring out when I'm just going to get off, because this was my thing. You know, I'd sneak off my room and do this, and I'd come back out, and I would be that same old guy reading the Bible and looking and acting like I was really going somewhere. But in my mind, God could not see that part of me. If I can fool you, then I can fool God, and then I can pretend. The Word of God says this. He made it very clear. He said, I have made it so simple that even a fool can't err. Even a fool can't make a mistake. Whether I think he's looking or not, he put it in my hands. He said, do not be deceived. This is Galatians 6 and 7. God will not be mocked. So a man soweth, that also shall you reap. That also shall you reap. I went to prison last time for a couple different things, and as I thought those were the things I was going to prison for, those were really weren't the things I was going to prison for. There were some things I had done that I was so ashamed that I would never tell nobody, but when I went to prison, as I sat in my cell, those things came to my mind and to my heart. And I cried. And I cried this last time. I cried about these things. There was a little old fellow. I used to rob him all the time. Get him all the time, you know, because he was an easy picking. I knew when it was his day, and he wasn't very smart, and I thought I was. Listen to me now. I'm not bragging. I'm telling you what I did. I'm telling you how I lived, and I'm talking about reading the Bible. I would go to his house, and he would hide his money. But I knew one thing. He would always favor where his money was hidden. So I would walk this way a little bit and he wouldn't move. I said, oh, you know, whatever. Then I'd walk the other way a little bit and he would start shuffling. Oh, okay. Got that old guy several times. I went to prison. I stayed 4 years in prison. And I cried all 4 years when I thought about that. Every time I thought about that, I cried. It just broke my heart. And I had to ask God to forgive me. And I just figured to myself, that old man probably is not even around anymore. You know, so God, he's not even around anymore. And I just feel so ashamed of what I had done. But when I was doing it, I'd get away. And in my mind, nobody knew. But it brought consequences in my life. There's always consequences to your sin. Even though I cried and asked God to forgive me, I still had to reap what I had sown. There was a consequence to that, and I had to suffer that consequence. And in that consequence, it wasn't very pleasant. You know, I spent 4 years in prison and went through the blues this last time in prison. You know, I passed some of you guys this time I was in prison. And I was living saved. I was living saved in prison. I'd see guys sitting out on the bleachers with their head busted open when somebody hit them with a lock, especially down in Miami County. This was a common occurrence. And I'd go to them, and all the gang members, the gangs I used to belong to, man, leave him alone. No, don't go over there and say nothing, man. Let him bleed out. But I would go. I would go. See, because the same courage I had in the streets, I had to have for God. You know, because I knew, now I knew he was watching me. Because he kept bringing that little old man to me. So I knew he was watching me in the midst of my mess and my chaos. I knew he was there. And I began to understand that I have to live right even when no one's looking. Someone called me the other night, female, asking for money. In the past, I'd try to give her money, try to help her do different things. Way back in the past, we would do things, you know. But anyway, I'm not giving you nothing. I don't have anything to give you. I said, I'm not going to lie. I'm not broke, but I just don't feel comfortable. Well, I really need some money. I said, well, do like everybody else and get a job. So she texted me, hypocrite. Called me a hypocrite. I told Marvin about that. Called me a hypocrite. But that's okay. That's okay. Because I had to learn first what help was. I had to learn what real help was. Me giving her my money and allowing her to do things or whatever is not helping her. What I'm doing is helping keep her stuck, help keeping her sick, and bringing down a blemish on my own name and on the name of God. So you can't call on the name of God. You cannot confess the name of God and Jesus and live any way you want to live. There was a guy in the Bible by the name of Naaman. Naaman was a general in the army, strong, had won a war over there in Syria, and had run a battle over there, and his name was just real big. But Naaman had leprosy. Naaman had leprosy. And one of the slaves that they had captured, she was talking about this man of God in this other country that could heal the leprosy. So the king put together some money and a little ransom, put together things, and he said he's going to send a delegation to this man of God and heal Naaman of his leprosy. So they triumphs over there and talk to the king. And the king says, well, who am I that I can give life or death? He's just doing this thing to start a war with me. He know I can't give life or death. See, just because the king had a title, he did not know God. He was not the man of God. Just because the judge doesn't give you the right break you think you should get, just because the case manager don't give you the right break, that's not God. That's not the man of God. It doesn't always come that way, because this king was ready to throw in the towel. But the man of God heard what happened and said, send him over here. So they go over there. And Naaman stands out there. You know, he's a general. He's a big man in his country. He's got his chest out and he's standing out there waiting for the man of God to come out and pray over him and lift his hands and let thunder and lightning go down so this leprosy can go where it's supposed to go. But the man of God didn't go outside. The man of God sent him a message by his servant Gehazi. He said, go tell him to go dip in the Jordan River 7 times. Now Naaman was wroth. Naaman was upset. The Jordan was a dirty river. He said, isn't this river better and that river better? And he was going off. He wasn't going to do it. One of his servants come up and said, listen, if he had a told you something hard, wouldn't you have done it? He said, if he'd have told you something hard, wouldn't you have got up and did it? Naaman thought about it. And Naaman went to go dip in the Jordan 7 times. And on the 7th time, he come up, his body was clean. Leprosy was gone. Just like the man of God. God has told you something so simple, but it's foolish to you. It's foolish to you. And God has told you something so simple, something that just doesn't make sense. That can't work because it's not magic. It's not bells and whistles. So you refuse to try what the man of God has already told you what'll work. But anyway, he goes back and he offers the man of God all these gifts, gold, silver, changes of clothes. Man of God said, no, I don't need any of those things. It's okay. You take that with you, but I appreciate you. So now the man of God has a servant by the name of Gehazi. Gehazi is looking and he's listening. And as Naaman, how you doing, sir? And as Naaman is leaving, Gehazi runs after him. And Naaman sees him and he stops. Hey, here comes the man of God's servant. What's the problem? He said, oh, the man of God has changed his mind. He said, Elijah said he'll take a little silver, he'll take a little gold, he'll take a couple changes of clothes. He said, okay. He said, I need two of your servants to help me carry it back. So they load up the horses, they take it back. Naaman gets home, he hides it before Elijah can see it. So then he hides it, gets his thing going, the other guys leave. Elijah walks in the room. Naaman walks in the room with Elijah. Elijah says, hey, where you been? And just like us, since he didn't see him, He couldn't know. He says, hey, I haven't been anywhere. I didn't go nowhere. And the man of God looked at him. He says, don't you understand that when you went to that man, my heart went with you? He said, is it a time to take money? Is it a time to take clothes? He said, I tell you what, since you took what he had, you're going to have what he had. He said, you're going to have that leprosy. And your family is going to have that leprosy. You're down the line. He thought he was getting away. What are you doing in your life today that you know isn't right? And God, you know God is at the brink. You're on the threshold of a blessing. And I can say this because I did it in my own life. I didn't have to read that in a book. I did it in my own life, holding on to things that were just going to keep me hostage and take me places that I didn't want to go, keep me longer than I wanted to stay, and cost me more than I wanted to spend. Because I thought God didn't know everything. See, sometimes you whisper just to that friend. Don't nobody know but you and that friend, but is that true? You know what state most people live in than any other state? Anybody got a clue? Denial. The state of denial. Aaron and Miriam were mad at Moses because Moses marries Zipporah, this African woman. And Moses, that wasn't so much real reason, the Bible says that's the reason, but a lot of the reason because Moses had favor. I'm going to tell you something. Somebody sitting in this room going to be used of God in a mighty way. More than one somebody in this room in such a mighty way that you couldn't have ever imagined. And then somebody who was helping you get there along the way, when you get there, is going to be mad when you get there. They're going to say, hey, tonight is his night to speak or his night to do this, whatever. They're going to be like, man, I'm not going to hear him. How are they going to let him speak? And I've been here 30 years. Because they wasn't real help in the first place. They weren't trying to help you. They wanted to make like they were helping you so they could look good in front of people. So Miriam and Aaron get together and they're going to whisper about Moses. Because nobody's in the room to hear but the two of them. They can get away with this. They can gossip about him, belittle him, say what they need to say. Nobody in here but them. We do it. On the phone, you send signs over to Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is you decide to do. We get away, we think. And as they began to talk about him, the Bible says God heard them. And God called the three of them out. He called all three of them out. You come to the tabernacle, attend a meeting, and I want to talk to you. So the three of them go out there. Now, I'm sure they don't know why they're going. You know what I mean? Because we do things that we don't think that nobody else saw or nobody else knows. We think we're getting away with these things. They get to the tent. And God says, he looked at Miriam and Aaron, said, if there be a prophet among you, he said, I speak to you in visions and in dreams. He said, but my boy Moses, I envy that relationship. Of all relationships in the Bible, I envy that relationship. He said, my boy Moses, I talk to face to face. He said, I don't come to Moses in no dream or no vision. I talk to him face to face. He said, I heard what you said about him. He said, because of what you said about him, he cursed Miriam and leprosy came up on her. Right at that moment, leprosy came up on her. Now, the Bible says in that next verse, Moses was the meekest man upon the earth. I believe that's what that verse says. And he prayed for her. And because
what does meek mean?
Meek means humble. One of the most humble men on the earth, he said. He said the humblest, the meekest, he said. And he prayed for her because even though they were talking about him, he didn't desire to see him heard or going through those things. So what happened? God said, well, listen, If her father had a spit in her face, wouldn't you have put her out the camp for 7 days? He said, I tell you what, put her out the camp for 7 days. And then when she come back, I'll heal her leprosy. You know, we do things all the time thinking nobody's watching. There's a guy at work who works with me, been there longer than me, known him for a long time. Comes to work drunk. We get paid on Wednesdays. I work first shift, he works second. We get paid on Wednesdays, and he comes in, he's coming in on great leave. And he stopped me a few weeks ago. Hey, Eli, hold on. I'm gonna ride home with you. I need a ride home. I said, you just got here, didn't you? And I smelled the liquor. You know, I mean, if I smell, everybody can smell it too. There's no liquor in the plant. I smelled the liquor. I said, oh, okay, I'll get you a ride home. I ain't got a problem with it. So he jumps to the car and he sits down and he's going on. And the next thing out of his mouth, he asked me, hey, what you got in your pocket? I said, what? My woman don't ask me what I got in my pocket. What do you mean? In other words, he said, no, you got any money? I said, well, brother, I said, I work for a living. Yeah, I got money. He says, let me borrow $10. I'm thinking to myself, it's payday. You just got paid. You've been here longer than me. You got to be making at least what I'm making. Because I got blessed when they hired me in that company. They paid me more than they paid the people that they bring in that company. But anyway, I said, all right. So I give him the $10 and I take him home. Next Wednesday, he comes back. He hands me $10. Thank you. Appreciate it. And he said, hey, don't leave. I need a ride home. I said, you're not working? Well, no, because he'd give me all kinds of excuses. Now, so we get almost to the house. He says, hey, man, I need a favor. I said, well, what's that? Hey, I need to borrow that $10 again. he said, this is his house. He's got some girl waiting on him for the house. So I give him the $10. And when I get to his house, there's a guy standing in the door, and there's another guy coming to the sidewalk. Now maybe you might fool somebody kind of green. Maybe you might fool somebody who smoked a little on the weekend. Maybe you might have fooled somebody who had a bottle in their sock hiding every now and then. But you can't fool a real live dope fiend. I was not a baby dope fiend. I was a real live dope fiend. And I know this situation because I've seen it in my very own life. He gets out. He goes into the house. Next Wednesday, he comes back. Comes to my machine where I'm at, where I go. He's drunk. Hey, man, I need a ride. Give me this little story. I said, okay. Next person phone ring over $5. But anyway, he goes and he says, hey, man, can I borrow $10 or $20? And I says, well, you know you. No, I said nothing. I said, well, how much? I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Say, I'm going to buy you another $10 bill. So I had him a 10. I said, now you owe me 20. He comes back to me 20 minutes later, 15 minutes later. Hey, man, hold on. You only gave me a 10. You said, I owe you 20. I said, remember you borrowed 10 last week? He thinks, I don't know. He thinks God doesn't know. My job out there at that plant is I'm a conflict resolution person. I'm the team manager. I'm the team coordinator. And I'm the attendance person. And I'm the recruiter. That's what I do for Shambaugh and Sons. They call me in the office. I want to talk with you. I said, okay. He said, what about this guy here, man? So we're having a lot of complaints about this guy. He thinks nobody knows. This is the plant manager. Tell me, hey, he's borrowing a lot of money. And rumors he's smelling like alcohol when he comes in. And then he told me his story. He said he came in and told me his girlfriend of 30 years had died. Now, and I know his girlfriend because his girlfriend used to be my sister-in-law. And he says, she died, so we gave him money for the thing. And I just put my head down and shook my head. He said, what's the matter? I said, well, I know his girlfriend. He said, she's my sister-in-law. You know, she's got my brother's kids. And I said, no, she's not dead. And they looked. Now, they were ready to go crashing right now because the guy, you know how you get when you feel like you've been played? When you feel like you've been played, you would rather just give money away and lose it than to get played. But the heart I have, the ministry I'm in, I come to help people. I said, man, hold on. I said, let me help him. I said, I know where he's standing. I said, I wore those shoes. I've said those words. I walked that street. I said, let me help him, man. Don't. He's a good worker, man. So we got to get to the other side of this thing. So, and the guy looked at me. He said, where? He gritted his teeth a little bit. He said, I'm going to give him a while. I'm going to let you. He said, all right. He said, I just believe in you. I'm going to back up. But this guy, so I called him, talked to him. I said, hey, man, you need some help, man. Oh, no, I'm fine, man. I've never had a felony. I've never been to prison. And I said, brother, I said, you know, I've been to prison and I've been to prison on the street. I said, both of them was equal as bad. The prison that I had put myself in on the street and the one they put me in for acting a fool. I said, because I can help you get to where you need to go. I said, first, I can help you to have a life worth living. That come Wednesday afternoon, after payday, on payday, you won't have to borrow money. And so he's in denial. He went through and he didn't want to do these things yet. And he think they don't see him. Now, come Wednesday, we'll see what happens. And I'm not saying that to tell his story. I'm saying that because that was my story. I'm saying that because somebody is dealing with things that they think God don't see. Things that, and if you stop and be honest with yourself, where did those things take you before? Where did they take you before? It's not nothing foreign. It's not something somebody's tricking you with. It's something that you know very much about. And where did it take you the first time? You got mentors in this room. You got men and women who spend their time coming here. We don't get paid to do this. I do it because I know what it's like to hurt and don't know how to tell anybody. I know what it's like to be afraid and don't know how to tell anybody. Because when you're big and you're a thug, people think that you're not supposed to ever hurt. People are intimidated by you. They think you don't hurt, but you hurt inside. You hurt a hurt that there's no pill can cover. And we've learned that. So all I'm saying tonight is God is everywhere. Put him on the forefront of your life. Let God direct you, and God will use men to direct you. Let somebody get in your business. We are only as sick as our secrets. Tell on yourself. See, I became a snitch. I started telling my stuff every time the devil tried to tell me something. I told on him because I no longer wanted to get into bed with him. I no longer want to lose anything out of my life. I don't want to lose my mother out of my life because of that. I don't want to lose my brothers and sisters. See, I'm the patriarch of my family now. My father's passed on. My oldest brother passed away. And my brother that's just older than me is in prison because he hasn't learned yet. He still wants to be the little brother. He hasn't learned yet. So I'm the patriarch. I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose my ministry. I don't want to give nothing away for 15 or 20 minutes worth of fun. That's not real fun. And this is, I'm going to close with this. I thought getting high was fun. But every time I used to get high, I'd get in a dope house somewhere and I started smoking. I'd be sitting in a dope house, scared to leave and scared to stay. What other option do you have? I'm scared to leave because somebody I had ripped off or the police or something is outside behind the bushes. I just know they are. I just know they're out there. And if I stay in here, I'd be in the back. You know the dope house. I already got you in the back room somewhere smoking every time you hear the knock on the door. You know what I mean? And God has a sense of humor. Because every time I leave with them dope houses, I'd be like this walking out. And get right by a bush, and God will make a can blow. Blink, blink, blink. Every time. But what I'm saying here, give yourself a chance. Talk to the mentors. Pray. Be honest with yourself first. and then let somebody in your business. Let's pray.
Because he's been blessed. You know, I got my first banking account ever.
All right.
Never had a banking account in my whole life. Now I finally got one, and God's opening up doors. All right. He's not going to give me no instant gratification by trying to hit $500 or something on a lottery ticket. And it just showed me that I got that sick feeling, like when you do that, when you've been clean a while and you go back to drinking or drugging and you get that sick feeling. I couldn't sleep that night. I was mad. I was praying to the Lord and asking him to forgive me for that stupid thing. But I just wanted to share that because I thought that somebody needed to hear that.
Thank you.
And I needed to get it out because I believe that secrets make us sick.
We're only as sick as our secrets.
I just want to add to that, gambling is an addiction.
Yeah, I know.
It's a big addiction. And so you...
I already know that because I got a problem. I used to gamble when I was drinking on the pool table, and I had a problem with, believe me, I got beat up a lot over the pool. But I have addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a devil slick because he may get you in that area, and then he'll start picking at you to get you back to where you don't need to be. And I just wanted to get that out because I needed to talk about that. So.
Anybody else?
Can I add something to what I said?
Yes, you can.
I've been going through like stuff too. And, most addicts who are sober are really good workers.
Excellent.
And we've got really good like work ethic and all that. And sometimes when you've been to prison and you've been a convict, you've been in the system and you've got all these charges, sometimes that background can come back on. Getting discouraged a little bit because I get these good job opportunities and then they say, okay, we're going to run your background and we'll give you a start date. And then I get a call and then they say, well, background's a little bit too colorful for us.
Let me give you
it's just cool to hear somebody who has been in the penitentiary and who has done all the time and now you're on the other side of it and you are this person who, you know, recruits people, you know, whatever. It's just, it's very encouraging that a convict can still get a good job somewhere. I just got to wait for the job that he has planned for me.
You know what you got to wait for? Not the job. Wait till he thinks you're ready. He's got it. I went through, when I first come on, I went through a lot of downfall, disappointments, where I thought I was there. I thought I was going to make it. This should have been the job. They offered it to me and everything, and it didn't. But when I let God clean me up and do what he needed to do, he sent me out. You realize I'm even now, God has me with a direct line to the mayor's office. I got a meeting at the mayor on the 20th of this month. We got a news conference coming up. I've been called to speak on a board in the, a panel in the attorney general's office on the in October. Same old dope fiend like me. None of that makes a difference. When God is ready, none of that makes a difference. None of that's going to make a difference. But you've got to wait on God. You got to wait on God. Sometimes God had to take me through a period of daily manna. I never had extra money, but I was never hungry. I never had extra money, but I didn't. And I had a place to live. I never had extra money, but my wardrobe was okay. I didn't have extra money, but I drove a Cadillac. God made sure that things were okay because he had to teach me that I can keep you today and I can keep you tomorrow. I wasn't ready for a bank account then. I wasn't ready for a credit card then. But when my time came, God began to give me all the things it takes to live life on life's terms. My credit score is over 700 today. That's what God will do when you just wait on him. You just got to wait on him. Sometimes God had to teach me to hear no. Because you know I couldn't hear no years ago. God had to teach me to hear no. Not right now. And I've learned that it's okay. Even God may say not right now, but it's okay. Because I'd rather be in the hands of God than to be out on my own freelancing with a whole lot of money.